Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we are talking all about season two of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, all 10 episodes of which dropped on Hulu last week. You know, I have complicated feelings about all the episodes dropping at once, which I've talked about, I think, previously on the last episode, because I really do think that a show like this would really benefit from having a prolonged conversation. And, you know, when all 10 drop, some people watch it all in one sitting overnight the first day it drops. Some people like me try to spread it out a little bit. Like I watched it over the course of like 4 or 5 days. But then what happens is that the online conversation gets really muddled because some people are tweeting and talking about it as if they've seen the whole thing, which they have. But then I'm sort of slowly talking about it, but people getting frustrated because my opinion doesn't line with theirs because, you know, I like somebody at the beginning of the season who does something shitty at the end of the season. It's kind of a clusterfuck, honestly, in terms of talking about the show online. But anyway, this season was incredible, truly. Like, I think that it just hit. I'm going to go very deep into it. I'm going to share a bunch of my thoughts on the season before we end the episode with a super quick joint interview with Layla and Miranda, where I got to ask a few lingering questions that I had for them about the season. So I posted this online, but I think that season two of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives was the best season of a non-Bravo reality show in a long time. I think Hulu has unlocked something with the show. Everyone clocked in. Every episode had something great happening in it. There's so many shifting dynamics, so much good personal storyline. There's like endless bombshells. There's constant fourth wall breaking. Like it has everything, truly. And it has this incredible origin story too, and the sort of the log line that Taylor Frankie Paul served up on a platter, which was like the Mormon mommy influencers on TikTok who are also swingers, like, and then also her arrest and everything that happened there. Like that you can't buy a better, kind of more compelling start to a show. Like that is served up on a platter. And, you know, I think some people would have fumbled the ball, but this cast did not. This cast has really carried this through two seasons. I think they very much improved on their first season, actually. And also the production is great. I think the editing is great. Everything about the show, I think, is just doing it right. And I also think that for season two, it was a fantastic idea to add Miranda to the cast. And I mean, and how great that it resulted in actual answers and details about the swinging scandal, because Taylor Frankie Paul felt much more freed up. She didn't have the guilt of like outing other people, because the other participant who she had a falling out with before season one was now actively participating in Mom Talk in the show. And now that freed up Taylor to talk about it, which that in and of itself made it worthwhile to add Miranda to the mix. I'm also glad that Whitney stayed put and weaseled her way back into Mom Talk, honestly. Like, I go character by character in this episode, so I'll get into it. But like, do I buy all of her completely reformed, you know, attitude and behavior? Of course not. But I did find myself rooting for her a little bit. And I think that's just kind of like some of us are conditioned to root for the underdog and root for the sort of odd man out in these reality shows sometimes. And that was the case for her going into this season. And I think that like she at least won me back towards the beginning, I will say, like I have to admit. I just feel like we also got a little bit more personal backstory on some of the characters that didn't have as much of that last season. You know, like I got the impression that Michaela filmed a lot last year about her health and skin issues. I got the sense that Macy did the same with her kind of crazy backstory with, you know, the father of her child dying before she gave birth, and sort of also like the trajectory of her college tennis career is also crazy. If you haven't, we didn't hear about that on the show, but I feel like those two in particular got a lot more space to open up about those stories, which was really, really nice. And there's also like, there is definitely a good amount of producer intervention on the show, but it usually, emphasis on usually, doesn't bother me. Like, I do think there has been one too many anonymous truth confession fueled storylines, like those like anonymous games they play. Like that's happened like 3 or 4 times at this point. I think they need to like kind of stop relying on that so much. But also like, if that's the only way to get something out there, then like, I'm also not going to complain about that. There could be a slight worry about the group being like too insular because of the Montauk premise. Like that sort of limits them in terms of like who they can really cast on the show, I guess. But like, there are 9 cast members. And they all clocked in this season. They all have something compelling about them. And so I'm not really worried about that and them not being able to deliver storylines or change it up through at least five seasons, honestly. Like, to me, the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is very much indicative of that possibility. Like, they've had that core four of women, core five, you include Mary, who have really changed it up so much over the course of five, going on six seasons. And so, like, if they can do it with four or five, the mom talkers can do it with nine, you know? And speaking of which, Sam Bush, Bravo historian, tweeted this, but, like, what is in the water in Salt Lake City? Like, they produce some of the best reality TV. It is truly crazy. And I do feel like, and maybe it is because of the similar themes, but, like, I really do, like, I was watching this and I was like, this is really scratching the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City itch as that show is off the air. Like, it's just so wild. I feel like it's also similar vibes in terms of, like, where the friendships are pretty business-like, you know, like, that's why they're able to change it up so much and sort of not get too personally offended all of the time. Because, like, you know, the mom talkers, like, they got together out of a business opportunity to do TikToks together and earn money together and get brand deals together. The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City got put together as a cast. And, like, yeah, there are some deeper connections there, of course. But, like, generally speaking, the reason why they're able to be so dynamic and switch it up so much is because the connections, at least at first, aren't that deep. I will say one sort of complaint I have is that since the show, like, they've all gone on Nick Viall's podcast. They've all done these, like, other, like, really deep divey podcasts. And that becomes too much to keep track of already. Like, I don't need all of them to go on the Viall Files. I don't. Like, I'm just, oh my God. That's a whole other tangent. But, like, I'm so sick and tired of those, like, dramatic teasers that they put out of that show, like, for interviews that aren't always even that like, you know, revelatory or bombshell filled. I don't know. I just, it's annoying that they all go there and, like, talk for an hour and a half. Like, and you feel like you have to keep up with that. I've listened to any of them because I'm sort of not down for that right now. I'm on vacation. But anyway, that's a little bit of an annoying thing. I also think that Hulu is winning with this Vanderpump Villa tie-in for the second season. Like, it's pretty brilliant. That show is not even close to the level of entertainment that this one is or potential, but it's going to get a lot of people to check it out because of this tie-in with the Marciano, Demi, Jesse situation. Like, people are at least going to go back and watch that one episode, if not the full season. And the unfortunate side of that is that it elevates Marciano's status as, like, a fuckboy that can't really be ignored, which is unfortunate because I really don't buy anything that he's selling. That's something that Bravo has never really done. It's had that, like, really intrinsic tie-in drama across the shows from the get like that. Like, yeah, like, eventually we got it on Summer House and Southern Charm. This is really smart. In season two of both shows, they're intrinsically connected. And that's really good for Hulu in terms of how it's able to establish itself as, like, a place for reality TV and creating this universe. You know, we're not getting a reunion, which I think at first it's like, oh, fuck, like, I wish we could get a reunion. But the season ends with that teaser of, like, a lot about Jesse and Jordan and the fallout of Marciano's claims about having an affair with Jesse. And so they've already clearly been filming a lot. I know they also filmed at Stagecoach, and they've been talking openly about the fact that they're in the process of filming more stuff right now. So I'll take a next season quicker than if I have to give up a reunion. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather just see it in the form that we're seeing it because I think it's working. And if you are really craving a reunion type thing with them, go watch Jenny Directo's interview with them for Entertainment Tonight. It's like 16 minutes. Most of them are on the stage together. They get into an argument. It is a pretty great group interview. And so if you're craving that, go find that. It's on YouTube. So yeah, I think I'm going to go person by person here to just kind of get into most of the individual things that we have going on. So let's start with Miranda. She is the new addition to the cast. I think it was a great idea to add her, even though I don't think she ended up, like, contributing that much after her and Taylor got back onto better terms, like, into, like, episode four at the corn maze. I do think she brought some much needed context for the swingers scandal and also, like, how that impacted Taylor's friendships and relationship. So I think it was a great addition. She's the only one they needed to add. I'm glad they didn't add anybody else. You know, obviously, I think things sort of, like, peaked with Chase at the Halloween party. Chase is Miranda's ex-husband, who also Taylor told him that she had a sex dream about him, and then he confessed his love for her. And he also is now dating one of Jesse's friends. So Jesse, like, invited all of them to the Halloween party. Somehow, you know, not thinking it was going to be drama. Of course it was going to be drama. Chase seems like a huge loser to me. He pushes Demi's waist and Brett comes after him. The police come, the whole nine yards. And on the ET interview, actually, that I talked about, like they sort of argue about, you know, the severity of Chase touching or pushing Demi and say that she sort of exaggerated it. And I think she did exaggerate it in the moment, but also like he pushed her waist. Like, doesn't matter. Like, this is a man laying hands on a woman. Like, I don't care if he didn't like shove her. He took his hand and he touched her waist to get her out of the way. I think that she had every right to call the red flag on him. You know, Miranda was also, back to Miranda, she was also really avoiding mentioning like true actual details about the swinging scandal. But I feel like, again, her presence allowed Taylor to mention the details for her, basically. So Taylor said, you know, they would have sex in the shower with their respective partners, sex in the bed next to each other with their respective partners. They would put blindfolds on and guess who they were kissing. They would kiss each other as they were modeling short shorts for some of the men. Miranda maintains like they never had sex with each other's husbands. And I believe that, especially like, you know, I think one of the through lines of the show is sort of like, there is still this like kind of not juvenile, but sort of this like naivete around sex. And like, you know, so I think that like Taylor labeling it swinging, I think that's their version of swinging, you know, kissing each other, being playful, having sex next to each other. Like, that's not that far off, you know, even if they weren't fucking each other's husbands. Beyond that, for Miranda, you know, I think I need to see more, but she seems to have friendships with Taylor and Whitney. And I like her kind of like low key energy. I think it's a nice balance to some of the other bigger personalities in the group. And in her interview, she alluded to some family stuff with the church too. So that could be interesting to explore in future episodes. But yeah, she clearly doesn't want the swinging scandal to define her. But let's see what else she has to offer. All right, Whitney. As I said, I was happy that she was still in the mix, even though she kind of got excommunicated from Mom Talk last season. Again, do I buy that she's completely different from last season? No, but I still found myself rooting for her while I was watching, especially, you know, when she was constantly checking in on Jen Affleck when she was having her mental health struggles. I thought that was really nice to see. And I think it spoke to like Whitney's core character. I think that Whitney shows her worst qualities when she like gets the most insecure about her friendships and she kind of gets the most hurt in those friendships. But I think ultimately, like, she's a pretty good person. And I think she just gets carried away with her emotions sometimes. She knows about the cease and desist threat, the alleged cease and desist threat that Demi and Brett made to Jen and Zach to stop talking about what happened with Marciano in Italy. And I'm curious if Whitney will eventually use that information. She's still sitting on it, as far as we know, in season two. And also, like, kudos to her for getting back to work so quickly after having a baby. I mean, she was bringing that baby of hers everywhere, and the baby was like less than a month old. I feel like she had her baby shower like less than a week after she gave birth. Like, that is quick work, and I respect it. You know, it couldn't have been easy, but she is bringing in the dough for her family, and she knew that she had to work and that this was a crucial time for all their careers. And so I really respect like how much she showed up despite being postpartum. I also thought it was funny though that she was like, you know, because at the beginning of the season, Whitney's basically having like her own show, right? Like, it's her and her husband. She is really pregnant. She's meeting up with like one-on-one with some of them, but like ultimately she's kind of operating her own bubble at the beginning of the season. And she's like, yeah, you know, like having a baby just like puts everything into perspective. Like, everything else is so silly compared to this. Like, it's just, you know, it tells me everything. And then like the next episode or the episode after that, she meets up with Macy and Taylor and like they tell her all the drama. And she's like, oh my God, I want back in. Like, I need back in. I died. Cause that's so me. I do agree with Taylor that Whitney does sort of take for granted how much Taylor sort of stuck her neck out for her in the early parts of filming for season two. And Taylor forgave a lot of behavior from Whitney. So I kind of wish that she was more appreciative of that and hadn't like let Taylor hang out to dry at the end of the season. But I also do think that she's kind of starting to get it. They seem to still be on fairly good terms. But yeah, she's clearly very insecure about all these relationships. And I think a through line is whether, you know, does she care more about the perception of her status in the group, of Mom Talk, of her in general, or does she care about the actual friendships and the strength of those friendships? Like, it's honestly kind of hard to tell sometimes. There was also that great moment between her husband and Taylor about, you know, getting second chances and embracing those and feeling as if you're worthy for those second chances at Friendsgiving. I thought that was like one of the sweetest, most like unexpected moments of the season. And I thought it was really touching. Somebody pointed this out online, but like, did you notice that during that scene, they cut to one of the guys like having his hand on the back of his chair during that conversation? I feel like that was like low-key getting at the gay rumors about him, which was shady of the editors. But yeah, anyway, Whitney does not want to be the villain, which I get, but I think it could be fun to see her lean into that, especially given like the fact that her and Demi are so tight now. Like they could be sort of a villainous duo together, which could be great for season three. So I think them leaning in could be really smart. I also think that it was so smart of her. Like this is kind of a villainous behavior too on the Arizona trip when, you know, they had had that, again, anonymous truth moment in the house. And then they went out to dinner to avoid having to talk more about herself. She actively brought up the Jesse and Demi contract thing to avoid talking about herself and her drama, which I think is a great tactic on reality TV. And the last thing about Whitney is like, Michaela was on her neck all season. And I think that Whitney handled herself fairly well. Like at a certain point, she just kind of started to laugh it off, you know, even if like, and sometimes it feels like she's in denial about the state of their friendship. I think sometimes she was laughing about it. And also she got very activated about it on the Arizona trip at that breakfast at the house after her tearful conversation with Macy. So, you know, the Michaela Whitney thing, like, it is deep for Michaela, but like it also watching it doesn't feel that deep. You know what I mean? I mean, it manifested itself in like this sourdough drama where like Whitney said she was going to bake sourdough for the bake off. And then because Whitney was, Michaela stole her thunder by also doing sourdough. But then Macy accused Whitney of using her sourdough starter. And Whitney was like, no, I didn't. Like that shit's amazing. Like that is like, that is so unserious. It really is. All right, speaking of Michaela, she is one of the ones who got very little screen time, I feel like, last season in comparison to others. And now she is activated. She's opening up. I loved the very beginning when she was like, I make more money on one brand deal than my husband does in an entire year. So that's why he's basically a stay-at-home dad. That just, to me, told me like that she was down to share some more information. She was down to be open. And I love that. We heard more about her skin and health issues, which I think was good to hear about from her. And also like it was just gutting to hear her talk about being sexually abused for years by her mom's boyfriend when she was little. Like I think it was when she was a teenager. It was tough to watch, and she was talking to her sisters about it. But again, like I'm just glad that she's getting that airtime, that screen time to get into it and to share more of her story. And it was also like really heartbreaking to hear about the fact that like Michaela did tell her mom about it, but her mom didn't believe her, and that sort of like suppressed her and silenced her for a long time about it because she didn't think that anybody else would believe her. You know, I think Michaela is an amazing friend to Macy. I think that they have one of the realest, if not the realest, friendship on the entire show. Her driving Macy to the crash site where the father of her child died was a really, really touching scene, and it really affected me. And it reminded you sort of how deep their relationship is. One of the funny moments of that relationship was when Michaela called Macy during her confrontation with Whitney, and she was like, okay, I am going to mute you. You'll be able to hear me. And when I say the word sisterhood, that's my safe word. Like that's my like come get me kind of word. But instead of muting Macy, she muted herself, so Macy couldn't hear anything. I was dying. I thought it was hilarious. She said sisterhood like 1200 times. And yeah, I just loved that. And again, like I think that her Whitney obsession is like borderline too much, but also like it cracks me up. And also it's clearly very serious for Michaela. I think they were BFF at some point, and she's clearly very hurt, kind of like for good, by Whitney. And she just like every time that she was asked about it, she was like, no, like I have no interest. And I just loved the I don't give a fuck energy. A great quote that she had when they went to the haunted house. She says, I don't know why I'm paying for these people to make my skin crawl when Whitney does it for free. Amazing. But yeah, I think Michaela overall, like, she's a good talking head. I thought that confrontation that she had with Macy of Taylor over the CMA's post when they were in the car together, I thought that was pretty solid. Like they really got through to Taylor, who can sometimes kind of see red and have tunnel vision about certain things. They got through to her. And I think that speaks to like sort of how seriously they all take Michaela and Macy. People do listen to her in moments where it really matters. And I thought that was a good moment to see. Speaking of Macy, I think that she is low-key like one of the biggest stars on this show, but she doesn't demand the attention, which I respect. You know, like they all respect her, and she knows a lot about everybody, and she's a really good connector. And I think that she could be basically a sounding board for almost any other person in the group, I think. And in some ways, like to me, maybe this is a weird comparison, but I think she's kind of like the Kyle Richards to Taylor's Lisa Vanderpump in a way. Like I don't know if that's the perfect comparison, but I say that, and like Taylor Frankie Paul is obviously like the alpha star. Like, she demands attention. She loves the attention. She thrives on it. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. That's just kind of how she is. But, and Kyle, especially when Lisa was still on the show on Beverly Hills, she wasn't that way as much. Like, she was kind of the beta. She was the connector. Everybody really liked her. You know, she had her moments, but like, I don't know. I think that's how I sort of think about Macy and Taylor as sort of the sort of two central pillars of Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. I think what's very indicative of that is her organizing that sit down between Taylor and Jenna at the beginning of the season, Jenna being the woman that Dakota cheated on Taylor with and lied about it to her. She had called Jenna at the very end of last season, which was like the big cliffhanger, and she followed through. She got them to sit down together. She got Jenna to give Taylor the phone. Like, not everybody could have done that. And like, she made them feel safe to really have that conversation, which I thought was great. It was nice to hear more about her personal storyline, again, about her baby daddy's death, about her secret IVF journey and her getting pregnant, her getting a book deal. Like, she's somebody almost like Heather Gay, who has like the really interesting backstory, you know, who like, actually, I think it makes sense for her to have a book. There's other reality stars who've had books where I'm like, I don't know who's reading this, but like, Macy's story, like, kind of even separated from reality TV, I think is really, really deep and interesting and full of twists and turns. But yeah, I think that Macy, like, what's so great about her is that she asks the tough questions and she stands her ground too. Like, she, at the beginning of the season, when Miranda invited them all over, like, she point blank was like,
if you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Why did you invite us here in front of everybody? And like, she got the answer, you know, like, or towards the end when they were in New Orleans, she stuck to her guns while talking to Demi about Taylor. And she was like, no, I don't feel that way. Like, I don't, you know, again, confronting Taylor with Michaela over the CMA's post. She had that emotional conversation with Whitney. Like, Macy's really good at that stuff and really breaking through. And she is like really invaluable, I think, to the show in a more low key way than some of the others. The Jen Affleck of it all. So first of all, you have to say up top, everything up until the conversation with Whitney and her dropping out of filming for mental health reasons, obviously that put everything else into perspective, right? And I'm so glad that she took the time. I'm so glad the production like gave her that space and that time to take care of herself. She clearly was in a very dark place. And I think clearly getting pregnant was sort of the thing that pushed her over the edge, because her relationship with Zach was in such a precarious place, and it was just very complicated, all of her feelings clearly. So I was really glad that she, I mean, felt safe enough to say that on camera and then was able to like take the time, right? And she's clearly not off the show. She's still doing a bunch of interviews and stuff. So I expect her to be back in full swing for the next round of episodes. But also, I don't think that that all takes away from the fact that like she exhibited some really manipulative behavior before that. Like, I had so much hope in that first episode, right? Like, she talked about how it's been hell with her and Zach since Vegas. They've been living apart, but then he dropped out of medical school in New York. He moved to their property in Arizona, but then in the first episode, he moves back in with her to like her rental property. She's like, if I want to go to Chippendales, I can. And I was like, damn, like, Jen like gets it. She is sticking it to the man. She's you know, her husband, she recognizes that her husband's, you know, an antiquated monster. But then like we get immediately back to square one once they're back under the same roof. And I think the one thing that I found really interesting from that was that Zach is the one that doesn't go to church anymore, which is very unexpected. If I remember correctly from season one, like his family is like intense Mormon, like goes back a long way. So that was interesting to hear. But Zach is basically like mad at her for confiding in her friends, even though she defended him so much publicly and she got a lot of shit for that. And like they're blaming Jesse and Demi for everything. Like even Layla writing that note that Jen is fake, they blamed Jesse and Demi for that. And it just feels like they're projecting their own issues onto everybody else and blaming everybody else for their problems in their relationship because they, I don't know why, like they just can't, they don't want to do the work. They don't want to admit that they have an issue at their core. And it just feels like they're constantly kind of, this season at the beginning, it just felt like they were constantly trying to put the cat back in the bag. I don't know. There was something, the way they handle all of that is like really off to me. And it probably is mostly driven by Zach, honestly. Like, I don't buy his like reformed image, honestly. I think it's the mask falls pretty quickly with him. And like, also like, okay, let's talk about the Chippendale scene at the Halloween party. Like, she approved part of that idea. And it was, of course, it was messy of Jesse and Demi to set that up. But also like, I don't know, like, I feel like Zach and Jen were like putting out this vibe that like they were so cool and open now. Like, he gets it. Like, he has to let her be a little more free. And also like, it's not like they were like inappropriately touching her. They were dancing in front of her. She could have gotten up if she felt that bad. I don't know. She basically acts as if she has no agency in some of this. And it's just, I guess it's all tied up into like her confidence and self-worth and all that. So I don't want to be too harsh, but like, I don't know. It's rough. And I want her out of this relationship, basically. I did love from her, Zach is driving her to go confront Jesse at that hot chocolate place. And she's like talking about how she's from the hood and she does the catch me outside thing. Like, I thought that was great. Like, that was one of her best moments. And she handled herself very well in the confrontation with Jesse. She got so activated. She got in two big kind of like moments where she was like, okay, I didn't give Jordan consent to rub his little small dick up against me. And then she also outs that Jesse's first relationship or one of Jesse's previous relationships was involved swinging. So she got some good jabs in there, which I thought was great. And then the whole Ben Affleck thing, the fact that like he basically threw her under the bus. Like, he claims that he was joking about it. They would always mention it as a joke. And then Jen was like, no, like, you said it seriously. Like, it was not a joke. And so I believed you. And he was like, no, like, you shouldn't have, like, he basically just blamed her for kind of making a fool of herself and lying to the public. And like, even if that's true, even if Jen, like, even if you want to believe him that he was clearly joking when he would tell it to her, this is your wife and you're on camera. Like, maybe like, don't throw her under the bus and blame her. Like, maybe take some accountability for that. And maybe just like, it's not that serious, but like, that to me was just like indicative of how selfish he is. And then there was that scene at the park where they're sitting on the bench and he storms off camera and rips off his mic when she tries to talk about things. And she's like, you know, she's trying to talk about how she feels. And he's like, I'm not going to have this flipped on me. And like, okay, dude. So just because she wants to talk about her feelings, she's flipping it on you? That makes no sense. I don't know. The whole time it was like, just when you think that she's like getting past the line, she retreats. And it's sad. It really is. And I hope that like, honestly, she has this next baby and like, maybe then she'll see the light fully, you know? And even though she dropped out of filming midway through, she did still manage to get that cease and desist claim out there through Zach, which was pretty great. All right, now we have Layla. Speaking of people who got way more involved this season, you know, I'm happy to see that she's in a healthy and happy relationship mostly, even if her willingness to go back into the church for Cam is a little distressing. Like, I'm kind of with Demi on that one. She was a little shady about that on their New Orleans trip, and I kind of was aligned with her on that. You know, a lot of people are saying online that Layla is like the producer's pet this season. I asked her in our conversation if all those stunts that she pulled this season were her idea. And she said yes, and she explained them in particular. But, you know, between the Jenna's fake note, pregnancy roulette, which was savage, showing the group chat to Taylor, meeting up with Marciano, like she definitely moved things forward, which you have to respect. Like that got things popping. But I also don't know if I believe that they were all her idea. I forget who said this, but somebody said, Layla's definitely gone through some changes from getting a divorce to getting her boobs done. But one thing that remains is that she's yet to have an orgasm with her partner. That was a great quote. And I think that she later did say she ended up having an orgasm with Cam. So you go, Glenn Coco. Good for you, Layla. The last thing I'll say about Layla is that, like, I do wish that she would have stuck up for Taylor at some point. Like, she kept saying, like, I'll stick up for you. And we also talk about this in the interview, actually. And then she doesn't in the moment. And, you know, at the end of the season, she goes over to Taylor's house with like a gift from New Orleans. And she's like, you know, I regret not defending her. And then she lists like two or three times she didn't do it. I don't know. She had multiple opportunities. And I'm just not convinced that Layla can bring it in the heat of the group moments. You know what I mean? Like, she's good at these like kind of stunty things on the side, but when it comes down to confrontation, I'm not sure she's the best at it.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO scoring model. Offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
All right, Jessie, another one who got more involved this season. I mean, we heard about her past swinging relationship, her health scare towards the end, you know, her genuinely impressive Jay-Z Styles business. Obviously, her friendship with Demi was kind of the biggest tea with her, though, until the very end. They were so tight at the beginning. And again, as I said, like, I sort of watched this pretty slowly compared to a bunch of other people online. So I was getting the hint. I was getting whiffs that, like, they don't last as friends towards the end of the season. But it was hard to imagine that. Like, they were such a close, aligned duo. But again, those sort of surface level friendships that these people have. And we also find out that, like, they hadn't been speaking for a few months prior because of the contract negotiations debacle, which I'm so glad we heard about that. That is, talk about breaking down the fourth wall. Hearing about contract negotiations is pretty crazy. I mean, maybe on Bravo, we've heard about it on reunions a couple of times, but like within the show, wow, that is just like, that's the kind of shit that I love hearing about because you never get to hear about it. And I think like until the end, Jessie was very forgiving of Demi, but I feel like the thing that took her over to the edge was when Taylor told her about the comment that Demi made about her salon, and she basically told Taylor not to go to Jessie for some sort of hair. I do want to know more about when that was. Like, I wonder if Demi made that comment when her and Jessie weren't talking. Was it before that? Was it when they were good? I mean, either way, it was fucked up. And if I were Jessie, I would also distance myself from a friend like that. But I am curious about when it was said. And I was actually, Jessie was supposed to be in the interviews that you'll hear at the end of the episode, but she called out sick. So I was going to ask her that. But yeah, I think she's right to be hesitant and at a crossroads and unsure about how to move forward with Demi, especially because Demi did not explain that comment well at all. Like, she kind of stammered when she was kind of pressed about it. And then the Marciano thing at the very end, when he claims to have like had an affair with her and slept with her multiple times. I don't know. First of all, the first claim was that she made out with him at Tom Tom. And like, I don't know, I just don't buy that she would make out as a married woman with another reality star at a place that is notoriously filled with fans of reality TV. Like, talk about like the most public place you could do that, like the place that you're most likely to get caught. So if she actually did do that and she expected it not to get out, like, somebody's got to have a talking to with her. But also, like, I don't know. I don't know if I believe that aspect of it. But she's promising to tell her truth in the next season. She did a TikTok where it was like, me and my truth, we sit in silence. And then the caption's like, you know, I'll share my truth when I can or whatever. Clearly, they've already filmed a lot. The prevailing question is like, are they semi-open? Are they still together, her and Jordan? I don't know, lots of open questions about her relationship that I previously didn't really care about. So that'll be interesting to see. All right, Demi, the villain of the season. And listen, she was right. She was a fan favorite, at least in my eyes, after the first season. She was one of my favorites after that season one. I mean, I still think that she's one of the better reality stars on this cast. She's not afraid of confrontation. She has star power. She's messy. I love the age gap relationship to Angie Harrington's ex-husband, Brett. There's a lot to love about Demi. This season, she clearly got very much carried away. She went way too hard. She was like a dog of the bone. It's hard not to kind of have lost some of that love for Demi, or a lot of it, in terms of how she carried herself this season. But I still think she's good for the show. I'm glad that she was able to balance it a little bit with you know, talking about her struggles to get pregnant again after 4 years of trying and having endometriosis. And she got really emotional around pregnancy roulette. And I think it was important to see the softer emotional side of her, honestly. And it was heartbreaking to hear about that. But yeah, I think that clearly Demi overall saw the reaction to her in season one, which is very positive. She took it and ran with it. And her issue to me is not necessarily the criticism that she had of Taylor, because I think that at its core, a lot of that was pretty valid. You know, Taylor not always knowing how to be a friend, her being a little volatile and unreliable, Demi saying that, you know, they're all going through a lot of tough shit, and like, welcome to the real world, because Taylor tries to kind of like use what she's going through as like an excuse for her behavior, I think, sometimes. So while I agree with some of that stuff, like kind of at its core, I also don't think that Taylor ever really crossed Demi in a way that merited how hard Demi was going after her and trying to take her down. She was like a dog of the bone. She should have taken Sutton's Jack's advice and let the mouse go after a try or two, because clearly the group was not aligned with her mission of taking Taylor down. But she couldn't see that. She had tunnel vision. She wasn't hearing it. And she was just so intent on being the leader and taking down the queen that she kind of lost perspective and lost sight of everything. Because like, Taylor is the undisputed star. She started the group and she's the only one who could ever end it. I think when it comes to Jen and Zach, I actually was siding with Demi a lot at the beginning of the season. I think that she and Jesse were messy with the Chippendales thing again. But Jen and Zach could have just laughed that off, right? Like, they could have just like, but they got the reaction that they wanted. And I think everything else that Jen and Zach blamed on Jesse and Demi was total projection, totally misplaced. And one thing I will say that Demi can do a really good job at is not getting flustered. When the claim about Brett allegedly cheating when she was out of town or whatever, when that came up, like, she was not flustered at all. She was like, she didn't believe it immediately. She didn't give them the reaction that they wanted. She didn't let them see her sweat. It's very clear that she did sweat in private about it, which is another story. But that's a good quality in terms of not giving people the reaction they want, and having that sort of strength of mind in the moment. She did hesitate and she did stammer when it came to the Marciano stuff. But when it came to the Brett thing, she was pretty solid with it. And you know what? That being said, like, it's also kind of rich of Demi to always be criticizing Taylor and Dakota's relationship, which, like, criticize away. I want him as far away from her as possible. But for her to do that while maintaining how healthy her and Brett's relationship is, when clearly the allegation about Brett rattled them. I mean, there was that amazing hot mic moment when they were leaving the baking shop where she was like, you're over explaining. Like, last night you were so weird about it. Like, why are you being so weird about this? Like, and then the Marciano thing also won't go away. She called Brett the all-star Provo boy. Like, I think she tried to build it up too much, like kind of like Brett was. There's also that moment where they're going to go skinny dipping at the end of the night in Arizona on camera. And Brett's like, no, you're not doing that. Like, you're not, like, that was tense and that was interesting and a peek behind the facade. And then I think that, you know, the contract negotiation thing, as I said, with Jesse is huge tea. I do understand Demi's explanation for why it happened a little bit. Like, I don't understand, like, her saying Jesse's so rich, she doesn't need the show. Like, I think that's kind of weird to say, but if she had gotten kind of a whiff that Jesse and Jordan were going around her in the contract negotiations, and that's how she responded to that in that way, then that, I guess, makes sense. But the initial thing of not needing the show, like, that doesn't excuse what she did, I don't think. Also, it's just sort of like, anybody who's going to say, like, it's not a shock that I was the fan favorite, like, I was like, Demi, don't say this. And then Taylor outing that Demi thinks that she deserves the biggest brand deals. I don't know. I do think Demi understands at the core that like she would not have this opportunity without Taylor. But like, I think now she feels the need, she doesn't feel like she needs Taylor to like maintain it, basically. But I kind of think that they still do need Taylor. I mean, I very much think that. And I also think that Taylor's right in the fact that like there's a difference in how open Taylor is and kind of has to be, because she has been since the beginning, than how the rest of them are activated like and dramatic at a dinner table and at the group scenes. Like there's a very big difference between that. I think that she was right to point that out. And again, she couldn't explain the comments about Jesse's salon to Taylor. She buckled under the pressure of the Marciano thing at the end of the season. So she does have her moments where she wobbles. And when it comes to Taylor, Demi says that she thinks that her own success triggers Taylor and that she's jealous of her. And she says that Taylor chases chaos and that she's a liability for Mom Talk. You know, I feel like she did have that moment of reprieve at Friendsgiving when she sort of realized that like Taylor's coldness to her and sort of her passive aggressiveness towards Demi sometimes had more to do with like Taylor's own issues than like her issues with Demi. But like that moment of reprieve did not last. And she definitely went way too hard after that CMA's post thing in the group text. Like clearly, like she took it up 20 levels, honestly. And then when she had that conversation with Leanne, I think that, you know, she went too hard and she was wrong for bringing up at various times like Taylor's incident and her mothering and all that. Like, I think that's fucked up. That, like, let that go. That we don't have to go there. I don't think that she was out of line for yelling at Leanne and for arguing with her. Because Leanne showed up to that party for a reason. She showed up there to fight Taylor's fight. She had a shady present with her. She was walking into the lion's den. Again, she was not invited. What did she think was going to happen? I think Demi had every right to yell at her and to let her hear it. But I just don't think she needed to go with the, you know, what'd she say to her? Taylor needs to go be a mom and get therapy or whatever. Like, that was too much. And then overall, I think that she tried too many times to bring up whether Taylor should be in or out of the group. Like, giving an ultimatum is never going to work on these shows. We've learned that many a times. And yeah, it seems like her only really like in with the group right now is her friendship with Whitney. And I feel like they're just bonding over their mutual distaste for Taylor, which is sort of a convenience thing more than anything, which again, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City vibes. All right, last but certainly not least, Taylor, Frankie Paul. She's the star. And in some ways, did anybody else feel this? In some ways, like this early trajectory of Taylor, Frankie Paul on reality TV reminds me of Teresa, where she is the origin story for the show. She has the scandal, she has the messy family life, but then now she has the hardcore devoted fans because people are so in her corner and rooting for her to get her life back together. And in some ways, you know, Taylor expects to be the star, but also in other ways, she's super relaxed and chill. And I've seen all those different things in Teresa throughout her time on Jersey. I don't know. There's something similar there. You know, I think one of the issues I had this season was that like you couldn't tell at any given time like where Taylor and Dakota stood. Like, were they fucking? Were they together? They would walk into a party holding hands, but then argue. But then Taylor would say they aren't together. I don't know. It was confusing. But I'm very proud of her for finally letting him go. And it seems like they're still not together now, which we love to hear. It was interesting hearing more about the abandonment issues that she has because of her dad leaving them at such a young age. She has lingering trauma and guilt also from the swingers situation and the fallout from her arrest. Like, she has very low self-worth. I think the cast thinks a lot of that has come from ever since she's been with Dakota. Like, it's been more chaotic and he's not good for her self-esteem and her sort of self-control. And it's just an interesting tension to see somebody who has so much star power, who's so good at reality TV, who is the clear star of a show, but then she also has such low self-worth. It's really sad. And it's you know, it manifests itself all the time. But I do believe her that she's doing the work to improve herself, that she's working through it in therapy. You know, even from the jump, when she took accountability at the top of the second episode at Miranda's house for her part and everything with the swinging scandal, like she takes accountability a lot of the time. And I also think that she's almost one of those people who's like compulsively honest. So I really do believe most of what she says, honestly. And then there was the scene, the one that everyone had everybody talking right away, which was the family barbecue scene. honestly one of the most fucked up things that I've seen. Like her stepdad going in on her, blaming her for Dakota cheating on her, and then her brother and her mom piling on. What the fuck was that? I'm sorry. That was crazy. I thought I was like living in an alternate universe watching that. That was so wild to see. And thank God she has her sister, the only fucking normal one, who showed that in several scenes this season, that she's like actually has her head on her shoulders and has perspective on this. But like, damn, I hated that scene. Like that was crazy. And it just made me lose so much respect for her parents. And I do not like her brother. And when it comes to Dakota, I mean, there was a whole scene with Jenna. Again, like Taylor handled that so well. She was so emotional. She was so open. She gave details. She was checking dates. I love when she had the two phones in her hand, like just doing the detective work. But yeah, everything with Dakota just exacerbates her self-worth and trust issues. And he also has his own substance issues. So like it's just a messy, toxic relationship that neither of them benefit from it. I think they can have a good co-parenting relationship because it seems like they also are friends for the sake of their child together. But like other than that, they do not need to be together. I feel like Dakota's really good at saying the right thing when he needs to, like when it's on camera, when it's around other people, when it's, you know, when she's like about to break up with him again. But then he doesn't hold up his end of the bargain. But I also did like hearing him at one point admit like that he activates all of Taylor's pain points. That was his wording. And, you know, having that awareness is promising, I guess. But it's sort of like Jax Taylor, where it's like, all right, dude, like you can say it in the moment, but I don't really, you got to show me for like a while before I really start to believe you. And I don't think that he's had that track record yet. It was also interesting to hear that Taylor really thinks of her TikTok activity as like almost like performance art, like not that serious and not totally based in reality. But then it takes her a minute to realize that like, even if they aren't that deep for her, even if they aren't totally real for her, because of her rabid fan base and her intense online following, when she shades them all on these sort of like not that serious TikToks, it puts all of her fans against those people and it has ramifications on the rest of Mom Talk. And she doesn't always immediately see that because I do think that like, you know, she's a star and I think that she can sometimes think that way. But once it's explained to her, to be fair, she gets it, right? And so I think that is, again, showing the ability to do the work and to learn and to change. I do think she went overboard with the CMAs thing, but also like the tea, like why did nobody comment on that? I see what she's saying. I think she had an overblown reaction to it and she could have handled it privately, but like why did nobody comment on it? That is kind of weird. They comment on each other's things all the time. And also they did see it. I'm sorry. There's no way that eight of them didn't see that. Please. I just love that Taylor knows how to get things activated. You know, she gets that look in her eye. Like, you know the look. You can tell when Taylor Frankie Paul is going in. She locks in and it is a thrill to watch. I'm obsessed with it. Like, there's nothing better. And she doesn't need backup. Like, I do think it would be nice to see more people back her up other than Macy, but like, she doesn't need it. That's the thing. Taylor can handle it on her own. And that, again, is why she is just like, she's it, you know? It's also a little thing, but it's funny how she skipped the New Orleans trip. And like on Real Housewives, when anybody skips a trip, it annoys the shit out of me. I think it's stupid. I'm like, no, this is like the whole cast needs to go on these cast trips. But for some reason, her skipping the trip didn't annoy me. I don't know what that says, but like did not annoy me. That's the tea on Taylor. I think that she's great. She made me laugh at that final Mom Talk meeting when she was going off. Like, again, she had the look in her eye. She was laughing, kind of that sort of evil laugh. And I don't know. I think she has it as a reality star. She's the perfect sort of central character here. And I just can't wait for more of this fucking show. Like, Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, that girl. All right, that's it for my thoughts. There's a quick little conversation with Layla and Miranda for you to end this episode. So keep listening for my chat with Layla and Miranda from The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. Stream season 2 on Hulu now. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back next week. I want to gab. Today we're gabbing with Layla and Miranda from The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. Season 2 is now available in full on Hulu. You guys, I just finished this morning and Wow. Just yeah. What a doozy of a season. How does it feel to have it all out there?
Good. I feel like we were filming for so long and kind of like on eggshells of like what we filmed. So I'm glad that it's finally out there in the world.
Yeah, you kind of forget what you film. Like, it becomes a blur after a little while.
I'm like, I said that. I did that.
Right. Right. Well, Layla, let's start with you because you pull a few pretty big moves this season. You write the note about Jen, the pregnancy roulette, the showing the group text. There's a couple of big moments that kind of get a lot of the stuff going. I'm curious, one, were all of those things you just came up with on your own? And two, do you regret doing any of them?
Yeah, they were things that I came up with on my own. The group chat text messages, I feel like everything had an intention behind it. The group chat messages, I wanted Taylor and me to be on a good place. So I wanted to kind of put everything I ever said about her out in the open. And also I wanted her to be prepared walking into that event that night and just kind of know what she was up against. With the Jen is fake thing, there's things that have happened with me and Jen behind the scenes that haven't been shown. But me and Jen's relationship has always kind of been kind of rocky. So that wasn't me just jumping on the bandwagon and wanting to hate. I do regret that one, though. If I knew what she was going through in that moment with her mental health, I would have never written it. And the second I did find out about her mental health, I was like, guys, we need to leave her alone. We need to go easy on her, give her kind of grace right now. So yes, I do regret that one for sure. And then the pregnancy roulette, I did not expect Demi's reaction to be that at all. I was gutted the second I saw her starting to cry. I genuinely just thought that I possibly could be pregnant, and I thought it'd be kind of funny to find out. I feel like I've had two unplanned pregnancies, actually. So very common with me at this point. So I just was like, oh, it'll be silly. It'll be funny to find out with the girls. But the second I found Demi reacting the way that she did, I felt awful. And what wasn't shown was me behind the scenes with her crying in a bathroom, both of us together, me apologizing for how awful I felt. So you have to remember at the end of the day, this is reality TV and there's so much context that's left out.
Of course.
We're not just one day just being like, oh, Jen's fake for no reason. There's things that are left out for sure. But yeah, the one that I do regret is the Jen is fake note.
Totally. And yeah, it's an ensemble show. There's a lot of people that have to get airtime. And so I totally understand that. Miranda, for you, it's like a lot of the beginning of the season focused on you joining the group and a lot of attention was paid to like the timing of you jumping back into this group. And I'm curious if now that you've seen all the episodes back and sort of how it's all been shown and how everybody reacted, do you feel like that was your intentions were portrayed accurately and kind of, can you just speak to sort of how that has been sort of shown?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, I spent so long during and after the swinging scandal, not really knowing how to handle the situation, obviously not handling it correctly. And I think there was a huge lack of showing my true self and my authenticity and who I really am as a person. And so to see some of that playback on the show of people being able to get a look into who I really am and a little bit more of, you know, why I did the things I did and see more of who I am as a person. I think that's definitely been refreshing because it's, you know, it's hard to get all of that just through social media alone.
And what has been the response since, you know, and I think it was episode 4 where Taylor really kind of like blew the lid off the details of the swinging stuff. What's been the response in just your personal life from that being out there now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's definitely hard for, you know, family and friends to hear probably. And I think, and I'd had some conversations with some like prior to that. But I also think, you know, my current stance in the church and taking a step away from it has also been difficult for them as well to come to terms with. And that's something that, you know, I'm trying to give them grace for processing that. And, you know, they're trying to give me grace for it in return. And it can be a lot for sure. And, you know, when you have such a religious background and a religious family, but all in all, we're working through it and they're
good.
And they love me.
Good. So. Good. Yeah. I feel like that's part of the theme with this show. There's so many things wrapped up and it's hard to tell sort of to differentiate between kind of what people are reacting to. Layla, the season ends with a bomb and with you meeting with Marciano. Obviously, we're going to see it play out. We've already seen that there have been things filmed when it pertains to all of that. But how did Jesse react to you meeting up with him? Is that something we're going to see or like?
Yeah, that's something that you guys will see. I'm not sure what I'll say with that situation. But I came to her with grace and understanding. It wasn't like an attacking situation. It was just like, hey, I've heard these things and we should talk.
Mm-hmm. And then what was the response to the rest of the people in the group chat once they saw that you had shown that to Taylor? Because we didn't see that on the show either.
I mean, rightfully so, they were pissed. I mean, that was definitely not cool of me to do. And like I stated, my intentions right there, they weren't to throw anyone under the bus. I feel like looking back, though, I maybe probably should have only showed what I said about Taylor and kind of blurred out their messages, but you can't take that like you do. You know what I mean? You have to kind of like stand on your decision. So, I mean, they were definitely mad, but I explained where I was coming from in my perspective and I took accountability.
Mm-hmm. And do you, last thing about that situation, do you regret at all not sticking up for Taylor in the moment at the Saints and Sinners party? Like, would you have done that differently at all?
Well, right before we walked into the party, I specifically told her like, hey, I know I just showed you these messages, but I would appreciate tonight not being the night that you blurred out that I showed you these. And then the second she sits down, she's like, I heard I'm dumber than a brick. So yes, I went back on my word of not standing up for her, but she also went back on her word as well. So I feel like in that moment, I kind of acted accordingly and I was a little annoyed right there. So I feel like I had a right to not say anything. I should have maybe said something looking back. But at the end of the day, Taylor's a grown woman and she can stand up for herself.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Miranda, you know, we sort of end the season with you seemingly sort of unsure about wanting to be part of this group. And you know, there's a scene that happens without you where everyone's sort of voting like who they want to be in Mom Talk. And people seem unsure about sort of your commitment to it, basically, and your investment in it. Has that evolved since then? Where does that kind of idea stand for you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, you'll be able to see it play out more.
Okay.
But I think that, yeah, I mean, obviously I had a lot of catching up to do, a lot of making up to do, being gone for so long. But yeah, I'm excited for everybody to see the details of that play out.
Okay. And then last question for both of you. I feel like, you know, at the end of season one, Whitney was the one who was really kind of on the outs and she's made her way back. Right now, that's obviously Demi. She left sort of up in the air with her. For both of you, do you see a road back for Demi within this group? Because just from interviews and things, it seems as though she's still pretty isolated from everybody.
I think if there's a road back for Whitney, there's a road back for anyone.
Yeah, so. I think at the end of the day, all of us are open to forgiving and kind of giving people second chances. I feel like as long as the person that kind of did the mistake can come in with accountability and open to criticism, then I feel like you can kind of start again.
Do you feel like Demi's going to have that?
I sure hope so.
I think there's a chance.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. And last thing I'll say is like I feel like once everybody probably sees reactions to different things from viewers, that can also maybe push people to feel more that way. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, Layla and Miranda, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's been probably a doozy of the last couple of days, but congrats on season two. It really is an incredible season of TV.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support and see you next time.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.